The BS Report with Bill Simmons. Bill Simmons is brought to you by Lamisil AT Gel. It's proven to relieve the burn of athlete's foot between the toes. Once a day, 1 week, and you're done.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
All right, welcome to the BS Report. We got two for you this week. Today, I'm calling my buddy Jacko at work for America's favorite running segment. Johnny, are you worried yet? And especially with some of the political stuff that happened this week, we could not resist getting a ring. So let's call him right now.
Complex Litigation, this is John.
Hi, this is client number 9. I'm looking for a hooker.
Hang on 1 second, I'll transfer you. How many diamonds would you like?
Three
diamonds.
Also, I like to do things that are unsafe. I just want to warn you ahead of time.
Not a problem. It'll cost a little extra, but a certain amount of your caliber can afford that.
What's going on?
How are you, buddy?
Is this the biggest, or is this the most entertaining political scandal of your lifetime?
It's up there, certainly. I mean, it's tough to top Bill Clinton 98, but this is a good one, especially because the governor of New York was so, Elliot Ness and
yeah.
Investigating crimes and holier than thou and rooting out corruption and evil in all its forms. And meanwhile, he's dropping 80 grand on hookers over the past 10 years.
God bless him.
Good
hey,
Lordy.
Can we trust anybody named Elliot? I think that's really the enduring issue of this.
I guess.
Has there ever been a trustworthy Elliot?
Well, just the kid that found E.T. seemed like a good sort. Wasn't his name Elliot in the movie?
Oh, yeah. He was a nice kid.
He was a good kid. E.T. trusted him.
Hmm. Mm. How does this affect the Yankees? That's why I'm calling. I want to figure out a way that this can affect the Yankees somehow.
I don't know who Elliot rooted for. That's a good question. He did give an awkward speech at the Giants rally after the Giants won the Super Bowl. They played it on the ESPN radio, actually, because it was so awkward and awful and typical politician manner, mispronouncing names and everything. So that was good. Maybe he was just tired from a late night the night before, though. A little
maybe
Super
he
Bowl
felt
celebration.
Well, I'm hoping that this is... This is really a sign of things to come for the Yanks.
Well,
the fall of New York.
You didn't hear about the good news, the Yanks, they signed the final piece of the puzzle?
No, I didn't hear this.
Billy Crystal.
Oh, I did hear this.
Oh,
yeah, I did.
Jeez, Billy Crystal.
What is the upside?
There is none whatsoever. There is
just
no. Well,
to get mocked?
The upside is I'm kind of hoping that he steps into the box and the Pirates pitcher dusts him off and then screams, "That was for my giant." He stands back up and he gives a little more chin music and says, "That was for City Slickers too." You owe me $10.
No jury would convict him. My question is, why does Billy Crystal have to gain from this other than having one of the latest midlife crises that really anybody's ever had at age 60.
Well, the amount of YouTube hits that he'll get when he takes a bad hopper off the face is probably more than his last movie. So some eyes to watch him, some ratings, some viewership. But no, it's a chance for him to embarrass himself and embarrass the Yankees. I mean, you know, some New York tabloids are blowing it up like it's the apocalypse.
Right.
But it's stupid, it's idiotic. I don't think it should happen, but I don't think it's like tarnishing the pinstripes or anything, so.
Right, but if you're Billy Crystal, it's a no-win situation, and somebody in his PR team probably should have explained that to him.
Yeah,
Billy,
why don't you just go to fantasy camp and not do this where there's cameras and 20,000 people in the stands, you know?
Billy, you're 60 years old, you're worth like $150 million. Just go buy an island.
Yeah, right.
Go buy something in Turks and Caicos, whatever that place is called. Get something there.
Maybe he was had similar pursuits as the governor of New York, and now that they shut that down, he's like, well, I've got to do something with my time, you know?
Oh, he's a Clipper season ticket holder, so there might have been a hangover from that. Maybe he's just searching for answers.
You know what I didn't realize, and the thing that makes it really pseudo is apparently he owns a percentage of the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Wow.
I did not realize that. And because he always comes off as like Yankee super fan.
Hmm.
Meanwhile, somebody should ask him who he was rooting for in the 2001 World Series.
Did he own the stake back then?
Apparently, yes.
Has anybody made the who's older, Billy Crystal or Luis Soho joke yet? Or am I the first?
They're saving that one for the clubhouse.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, they'll break that one out to, you know, haze Billy a little.
How you feeling? What's going on with the Yankee camp other than this Billy Crystal disaster?
Well, they had gotten a huge brawl with the Devil Rays. Or I guess they're not the Devil Rays anymore. I guess they're just the Rays now. Gotten a huge brawl with the Rays today.
Oh, today?
Yeah.
Oh, retribution for the catcher getting run over?
Yeah, I was out at lunchtime and I was listening to the radio, and apparently there Shelley Duncan was on first, and he was out. There was a play. I don't know if it was a ground ball or what, but he was out by like 40 feet at second, and he came in with his spikes high at second base. And Johnny Gomes, the Rays right fielder, took exception, ran in from right field, and the benches cleared, and a brawl ensued.
Wow.
Yeah. Bad blood between the Yankees and the Rays because of the thing where some minor leaguer broke another minor leaguer's arm at a play at the plate.
The Rays are one of those teams that you don't want to feud with if you're the Yankees because they have nothing to lose.
Exactly.
It's like a millionaire feuding with some street kid.
Right, exactly. Right.
Like nothing to gain at all, really.
I know. The Yanks' luck would be that, like, A-Rod or Jeter is hurt in some spring training brawl against the Rays. Against the Rays, like, fourth or fifth outfielder, you know.
We feuded with them for, like, 3 or 4 years during the Pedro era, and it never made sense because, like, when they were throwing at us, like, you know, they're throwing at Manny Ramirez, who makes $20 million a year, and we're throwing at Jared Williams, who makes, like,
$400,000.
Yes. It's like, somehow this equation is not balanced correctly.
The Rays will take a Pedro Martinez for Gerald Lice Williams trade any day of the week if you're going to say, like, who's going to be ejected from this game, you know?
Yeah, and in fact, I happened to be watching live, and I think it was 2000, 1999 or 2000, when Gerald Lice Williams charged the mound. It was one of the most terrifying moments in the history of Boston sports. Poor Pedro was like 110 pounds.
The other thing I heard on the radio at lunch was that apparently there's a lot of strong rumors about Coco Crisp being traded to the Mets for some guy named Pagan on the Mets who's had a hot spring but is basically like a kind of a knock-around player.
Hmm. That's is he a pitcher or a position guy?
I think he's a position guy.
Ugh. I think Coco Crisp is one of the best values out there right now. I mean, at least the guy's... He's a switch hitter, and he's good defensively, and he's got speed, and he's at least proven that he's a major league player. And he's tied in at a relatively fair price.
But the Sox weren't really, I mean, everybody knows they have to get rid of him because they want to trade. I mean, they want to play Jacoby Ellsbury, so.
Yeah, but that's fine.
Really,
you don't give him away, though.
Strength. No, true. But I don't know that you can get that much for him. He makes a fair amount of money, doesn't he? Like $10 million bucks? $8 or $10 million?
No. It's in the 4 to 5 range.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought he made more than that.
No, they have him tied in at a pretty fair price.
Oh, that's not bad.
Who's the Mets center fielder right now? I'm blanking.
Beltran. Carlos Beltran.
So would he move to one of the corner spots?
No, I don't know what they're going to do with, I think Coco's going to be riding the old bench for the Mets too.
Oh, that's weird. That's not going to happen.
I don't know. Pretty strong. They had like breaking news on the radio. They were strong enough to do that.
We better turn Coco into a reliever. I'm going to be upset. We're still a reliever short. We still have 47-year-old Mike Tomlin coming back to pitch another 80 innings this year.
Well, you've got a lot of problems. My Super Bowl theory is really crystallizing by the day.
I know.
I mean, Josh Beckett, the back problems.
Yeah, I wish
Nowhere
I could
close
say I was
to returning.
I wish I could say I was surprised, but after they showed that photo of him when he looked like I don't know what actor could I use here?
He looked like John Daly.
Hey, it looked like John Daly a little bit. That was a little bit of a concern, so I can't say I was shocked by the back issues.
Yeah, he looked like a Rudy-era John Favreau. What do you feel like better about that one?
Can you imagine? Yeah, that's pretty good. By the way, I was watching Rudy, and when he screams, I forget what he screams at Rudy at the end. It's something like, "Who's the man now?"
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Or he's something like that.
Who's the dog now?
Or he's who's the little guy now? Or something like
that.
Yeah,
yeah. It's really one of the funniest moments in history. He's like at least 325 pounds. Also, Vince Vaughn is in that movie, which I always forget until it's kind of like...
I was in the movie, Rudy.
Oh, you were in the crowd?
I was in the crowd. I was at Notre Dame at a football Penn State Notre Dame game when they filmed the crowd scene when they carried him off the field.
I remember
hanging out on the set with John and Vince, and we talked about a plot line for Swingers that was fantastic.
You could see the killer instinct in those guys even back then.
I said to Vince, I said, "You're so money," and he said, "We're going to use that line."
Did the fact that Rudy became such a sleazebag in real life taint the movie for you at all when it comes on cable?
No, I still get. I'm going to be honest with you. I get a little misty a couple times in that movie.
Really?
I get a little misty when Rudy gets into Notre Dame.
Yeah, that is good.
And I get a little misty when Rudy runs onto the field to play in the game, and they have like the swelling music. It's, you know.
Oh, I see. The scene that always gets me is when the players come in and start bringing the jerseys to the bad guy from Hoosiers.
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, it's good when he's gonna lead them out of the tunnel, and the other guy's like, "Are you ready for this?" or something like that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I've been ready my whole life or whatever. Yeah, there's a lot of mistiness in that movie. Yeah.
Yeah, and it doesn't really matter at all that Sean Astin is 5'1" in real life and eventually played a hobbit in Lord of the Rings.
Right.
It doesn't matter at all.
That's exactly right.
I want somebody to have a sports movie award because the coach from Rudy, who was also Eddie Harris in Major League and was also the bad guy in Hoosiers, who then became a good guy.
Yeah.
Those are three of the best.
It's a pretty good resume right there.
Yeah, that really is. It's up there with the girl, the woman who was Daniel San's mother in Karate Kid and was also in Fast Break and White Shadow.
Gabe Kaplan's wife and
Randy Heller.
Girlfriend, yeah.
Wait, back to the Yanks.
I'm sorry, yes.
So, how are you feeling this week compared to last week?
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you. I have some concerns because I heard an interview, an unfortunate interview with Yankee skipper Joe Girardi.
Uh-oh.
And first of all, they're doing this idiotic thing where they're determined to make Jabba Chamberlain a starter instead of just making him this generation's Mariano Rivera and keeping him as the eighth inning setup guy and then eventually sliding him into the closer's role when Mariano no longer has it, probably next year.
I thought they scrapped that idea.
No, well, they're still trying to stretch him out, and they're like, well, we're not sure what we're going to do. We're going to see how the spring goes and determine at the end of the spring what's going to happen. They haven't made up their mind. Mm-hmm. And they keep saying in the second half of the year he's going to be a starter, meaning that the eighth inning role will fall to the duo of Latroy Hawkins and Kyle Farnsworth.
Mm.
I mean,
Billy Leike.
That is just trouble waiting to happen, sir. Let me tell you, big trouble.
Well, I was excited that Blue Jays' Casey Jansen went down today, who I really liked. So maybe they won't. Maybe they'll start having injuries and like they do every year, and we don't have to worry about them.
Maybe. That's true. They always run into problems. So they're determined to do that, and then they're like, oh, and moreover, Phil Hughes and Jabba, when he's a starter, and Ian Kennedy are all on innings limits. So
innings limits. What?
Yeah, like they're only gonna. He wouldn't divulge what they were, but that the Yankees have in mind a certain number of innings that all three of those guys can pitch for the year. So that means you're gonna get a lot of like five innings of Phil Hughes, and then they're gonna just try and piece it together for the rest of the game. It's completely idiotic. So on the radio, they said, "Well, I mean, this is the New York Yankees with a $215 million payroll, A-Rod and Jeter and all the other names." Are the Yankees like trying to win a championship, or is it about developing players? And Girardi's like, well, it's kind of both, but you know, we really have to worry. And they're like, why are they on innings limits? And he's like, well, you know, we really have to try and develop them, and they're going to be Yankees for the next 10 years, and we're looking to the future. Looking to the future? What? What are we, the Kansas City Royals now? I mean, give me a freaking break.
You have like seven guys in contract years.
Yeah, and all these, and up to mention, the Yanks aren't getting any younger. I mean, Jeter and A-Rod are both over 30, I believe. Or you know, A-Rod might be knocking on the door at 30. Jeter's over 30. Posada's 35 or 36.
Yeah.
Rivera's like 37. Now we're going to be like the scrappy twins and like develop guys through the years. Give me a break.
Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense. I'm surprised they didn't sign one overpay like one starter.
Has it ever worked in history of sports where a team is like trying to develop guys for the future and they win a championship?
No. I mean, the Red Sox probably came the closest because they were able to integrate Buchholz and Ellsbury and a couple other guys a little bit.
Yeah, but they had like, you know.
That wasn't the core of the team.
Right. So yeah. I don't know. That was a very troubling interview, and I'm just like, I don't know what the direction is or what the plan is. I think Cashman is far too ascendant, and I'm not a big Cashman supporter because I think he wants to show how clever he is, like a rotisserie guy, like, you know, show his seventh round picks that they came through and like he's smarter than everybody.
Well, on the other hand, though, if their plan is to potentially trade for somebody in June or July, I actually support that because I never understand why not just baseball teams, but basketball teams don't do that too, where you know there's going to become guys available.
Yeah.
So why overpay for these guys that you don't totally like now when you have a chance to get somebody better in June or July?
That's true. And Hughes look good in the spring. In a couple of months, I may completely change my tune, and I'll be like, "How about the Young Guns, huh? Hey."
You know? Well, that one article I sent you about Hughes was pretty encouraging.
Yeah, it definitely was. And I enjoy his blog, I'll be honest with you.
what was your favorite part of his blog so far?
I like the contests. I like that he calls Jabba Chamberlain Justin. And I like the fact that I learned that Ian Kennedy's clubhouse nickname is Ike.
Is it really?
It's what it is, yes.
I think he's the first white Ike ever.
Yeah, since Dwight Eisenhower.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about Dwight Eisenhower.
I think he was the first white Ike, yeah.
So he's the second white Ike ever.
Mm.
Well, I've been putting a lot of thought in the Red Sox lately, and I have to say.
Yeah.
You know, a hidden thing about this season is Manny's kind of in a pseudo contract here.
He is, and he hired Scott Boras.
Yeah, and they have a buyout. I mean, not a buyout. Right? They could pick up his option for 2009. But I like the thought of Manny in a contract here. I feel like he's just intelligent enough to maybe understand the concept behind trying harder and making more money.
You're giving him a lot of credit there.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think Manny knows what day of the week it is, let alone it's the last year of his contract.
Really?
Manny might be at another team next year and still think he's on the Red Sox.
I don't think.
Are you worried about Clay Buchholz's 12.5 earned run average in spring training?
I'm a little worried about that. I will admit. I'm worried about the starting pitching in general on this team because all of a sudden, a lot is resting on the shoulders of Dice K.
Yeah.
And people, including myself, are putting a lot of stock into this whole thing about, well, maybe he just needs to adjust. You know, the first year he's coming from Japan, such a major cultural adjustment.
Right.
Guy was sleeping on floors on road trips because he didn't like the mattresses.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
He's got to get used to the hitters. He's got to realize that he can just over. So I've talked myself into the second season thing with him.
Sure.
But it's one of those things where it's definitely not a sure thing. And the guy did have really not that good stats last year, other than he pitched 200 innings and had some strikeouts. You know, he was pretty much relatively useless down the stretch.
Pretty much. Not lights out for the money they paid for him, certainly. Not what he was made out to be, the national treasure of Japan, as Theo called him.
Yeah, so if Beckett's really a little bit banged up, I just think that puts...
The lingering back injury, I mean, those don't go away, Willie.
And then Wakefield is now penciled in to hopefully giving us what he does every year, which is he pitches well in April and May and then completely self-destructs for 2 months and then pitches well again. But we're counting on him now for this April, May. And how old is Wakefield at this point? He's got to be like 40, right?
41? Well, yeah, but I mean, he's got like little league delivery with the knuckleball. He could be like a Negro and pitch till he's 60. Knuckleballer is a weird thing. I mean, he doesn't put any kind of strain really on his arm, although he always develops back injuries and problems, so.
You know, we always discuss this, but why don't more people learn how to pitch the knuckleball?
I don't know. It's crazy.
You would think for the amount of money that's at stake and the amount of pitchers that come out of high school and college every year that we would have more than one knuckleballer per decade that's successful.
If I had to do all over again, that's what I would have focused a lot more of my efforts on learning the knuckleball.
Well, you tried to throw them in stickball.
It's true. It's just, you know, we didn't have the scouts to see my development like I would have hoped.
Hey, we got to talk about Holy Cross basketball.
Mm.
We got bounced last week in the quarterfinals of the Patriot League tournament by American University.
Did we? I was not even aware of this.
Well, that's the second darkest moment in Holy Cross basketball history that you weren't even aware of that.
Right.
The first is that we lost to American in the quarterfinals of a league tournament that loses in the first round every year.
That is outrageous.
What do we do?
Jeez. You know, I got an email the other day, and it said, it's from the Holy Cross alumni office or whatever, you know, all the emails everybody gets, and it says, Holy Cross to host Patriot League. And I hadn't really been paying attention to the Holy Cross men's team, so I'm like, because I thought they were good in the beginning, and then last I saw they were like 12-10 or something. They've fallen apart. So I'm like, wow, they must have bounced back, and maybe they're going to host a tournament. So I opened up the email, and it was the women's basketball tournament. Women's basketball emails. They're sending me women's basketball emails?
It's on tonight, Johnny. I think ESPN2, the Patriot League Championship.
I have to stop and get some popcorn on the way home for that.
Come on, it brings you back to the old days of Noreen Powers and Annie Davis a little bit.
All the greats. Sure.
Isn't it weird, though, that we went through a college that while we were there, sports mattered, and now sports has become completely irrelevant? We have no attachment to it at all, and you didn't even know that we lost in the tournament?
A school that produced Tommy Hudson and Bob Cousy, that was known as the, you know, the basketball school in the Northeast in the 60s. In the East, really, the eastern part of the country. I mean, Holy Cross was it. And now we get bounced by freaking American University. How long have they been Division One?
Oh, come on. AU's been good for years.
What's American University's basketball tradition? Good almighty. It's outrageous. And you have Ralph Willard, the guy coached in the Big East, you know? I mean, the guy's a legit coach.
It's humiliating. Like, I've watched a ton of, you know, I jumped on the Texas bandwagon last year. And then this year.
Because of your illicit love for Kevin Durant.
Because of my illicit love, my man crush. And then this year, I haven't really talked about it a lot because I don't want to lose my USC fan base. But
sure.
I made a really, really dramatic jump on the UCLA bandwagon a month ago.
Yeah, I've noticed some praise of Kevin Love. Isn't that his name?
I do. I love
the
Kevin Love.
Big man outlet passer since Walton.
He throws an 80-foot outlet pass. Like, how could you not support this guy?
Yeah.
And he's really like, he's going to be the next Laimbeer. He's like an evolutionary, more polished Laimbeer who's a better passer. But he's got like 3-point range. He always knows what he's doing. He's completely unathletic, so the scouts are going to underrate him.
Right.
And he's going to be a really good pro. And I also love his like little beard thing.
That line
that we've been talking about this for 20 years. How does somebody shave that into the line?
You got to be in like an hour long process.
Yeah, it really does. And what happens if you screw up? Is that it? Like you shave it off. Anyway, I love him and I love, I'm actually mad about this because my guy this year was this guy, Russell Westbrook, who I just loved. And I thought he was going to be the sleeper in the draft. And then all of a sudden Chad Ford last week writes, he's like going to be the 7th pick.
Wow.
And he's been stolen from me, so now I have to find another guy. But anyway, I've jumped on the UCLA bandwagon. I just think it's really sad that I went to a Division I college.
Yeah,
and I have to jump on these
bandwagons.
Yeah, I went to a Division I college that won the 1947 NCAA and 1950 NIT.
51,
or maybe vice versa.
47 NCAA, 51. I think it was 51 NIT.
Yeah, whatever. And now I just have to jump on these bandwagons. Like,
well, I mean, you said that the second darkest thing is that I didn't know that they got bounced last week, which is true. But I mean, the reason behind that is, remember last year when you and I and Joe House got together for the NCAA tournament?
Yes.
We were so excited for Holy Cross. Every year they've come close, you know, the past 10 years they've made a little noise in the first round game.
Yep.
You know, they had a 10-point lead over Kentucky. We don't have to go down the litany. We were all excited. They're playing Southern Illinois. Granted, they're a 13th seed against a 4, but like if any team they could knock off, it's Southern Illinois.
We were fired up, and we had a few in us.
All of us had on like Holy Cross T-shirts or hats. We were all into it. You know, if there was purple face paint, there might have been some face painting involved. It went that far, and then we watched the game. And what did they score? Like 36 points.
Yeah, we shot like 11% for the game.
I mean,
we broke some sort of record.
And then, you know, to get the litany of emails about the quality or lack thereof of our cheerleaders, it was all just too much for me to take, you know?
Some vicious, vicious emails about the cheerleaders.
some really bad emails about the cheerleaders. And I mean, you're playing Southern Illinois. I mean, they can't be like the girls from the Emperor's Club, you know?
Right.
I'm guessing. I haven't been to Southern Illinois, but that's just my guess.
The Salukis?
Yeah, they are the Salukis, I think, right.
I'm glad you brought this up.
So after that, it's just so disappointing. It's like, why am I going to get my hopes up and be excited for the Patriot League and excited for them to get in the tournament and lose by 60 to, you know, Butler or something, you know?
Right. Hey, I got to ask you about, you know, I've been kind of advocating the Seattle Sonics cause a little bit.
Mm.
They're getting their team ripped away from them. You live in Hartford.
I live outside of Hartford, but yes, I work
outside of Hartford. You were a junior whaler growing up.
I was a junior whaler.
You were a diehard Whales fan.
I was.
Whale fan, I'm sorry.
Mighty Whale.
Mighty Whale. We argued about it at Cecily in college. In college, they even played in one playoff series that threatened to divide us.
It's true, against the Bruins,
back when I cared about the Bruins before I quit on them.
Period.
But that team was ripped away from you.
Yeah.
Describe what that feels like as a city to just basically have a team hijacked.
Oh, it's hideous. It's awful. I went to their last game ever of the Whale, and like people, grown men were crying in the stands and weren't afraid to show it. It's hideous. especially if you're like Hartford. I mean, at least Seattle has the Mariners and the Seahawks. It doesn't make losing the Sonics any easier. But, I mean, for Hartford, for Connecticut, the Whale was the only game in town, and it was the only game that's going to be in town, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there was a tradition going back to the early 70s of hockey and hockey night in Hartford and the whole thing. I grew up with that. So it was a big deal. So to lose that, and especially a team that had been historically pathetic, is a understatement.
What do you think you guys could have done differently if you had to do it over again, or was there nothing?
Well, no, there was nothing because the real mistake was trading. I mean, selling the state, who had an interest in the team, sold it to a guy that had no connection to Connecticut.
Right.
And he was bound and determined to go elsewhere. I mean, the team hadn't made the playoffs in like 5 or 6 years, and they still played to 90% capacity at the Civic Center. They had a pretty decent season ticket base, and the state and the city were willing to build a new arena, to modify the arena to anything that he wanted, and it was just like his heart was set on taking the team elsewhere. If you get a guy that doesn't have any connection to the city and or the state, and that's his desire is to take it someplace else, it's going. Let me tell you, there's nothing you could do.
Well, that part is exactly what's happening in Seattle.
Right. And in a similar situation with Seattle, there was guys in Hartford, there was an ownership group that was put together with guys that had ties to the community and wanted to keep it here. And for some reason, the governor at the time had a deal with, or made a deal with this other guy, Carmanos, and who was from Detroit, and really didn't care about Hartford, just wanted to own a hockey team, and got one.
And then
won a Stanley Cup, which was just horrific and horrendous. And
how did Hartford react to that?
Not well. I mean, it was bad. People were like, I mean, the worst thing ever is like, if I go out someplace, or we, you know, friends of mine and I, we go out and you see somebody wearing like a Carolina Hurricanes jersey or hat, like I want to punch them in the face. But people are like, well, it wasn't the players, it was the team. And it's like, you're stupid, because who do you think is getting the money when you go buy your Carolina Hurricanes jersey, you know?
Yeah.
I would say this to the good people of Seattle. If you ever see anybody wearing an Oklahoma City Sonics or whatever they're going to be called jersey in Seattle, because, well, it's not Kevin Durant's fault, let me tell you. You feel free to punch them in the face as well.
I agree. It's you become a widow. And that's kind of what I did with the Bruins. They never moved, but I just, by 1995, I just had it with the owners. And it's not like I picked another team. I was just done.
Right.
I think that's what the Sonics have to do. I think they're done until they get an expansion team. I don't see how you follow them to Oklahoma City.
And I mean, people around here were kind of like, well, Connecticut's between New York and Boston, so it's like, well, do you root for the Rangers, or do you root for the Bruins, or do you pick a new team? But it's just not the same. And people were like, well, that's part of the problem, is people around here rooted for the Bruins or the Rangers, and they didn't support the Whalers, so that's part of the problem. So you just can't. I mean, I have no interest in hockey. It was cool when they played the outdoor game. You know, I'll watch that, but no, I don't care.
Well, you also
the commissioner
lost,
aided and abetted this whole thing, too.
Oh, he's the worst. You also lost one of the coolest nicknames in any sport, the Mighty Wheel.
Indeed.
And you lost maybe the best theme song of all time, the Brass Bonanza.
I mean, Hartford is a fan base. I don't know if this is cool or pathetic. It's probably a little bit of both, but the Whalers won the Adams Division in 1986, and they played the Canadiens in the first round, and they actually lost the playoff series to the Canadiens in 7 games. It was an exciting 7-game series that they lost.
Yep.
And the city had a parade for them because they were the regular season division champions.
I love this story.
And Jack Evans, who was then the coach of the Whalers, said he won a Stanley Cup with the Chicago Blackhawks, I think sometime in the 60s, and said that Hartford had more of an outpouring for losing a first-round series and a better parade than Chicago did when they won the Stanley Cup.
How does that team lose an NHL? How does that city lose an NHL team?
It's really, and you know, and then the NHL expands to, you know, Miami and Phoenix and you know, Greensboro, North Carolina, these places that have no hockey tradition whatsoever. Why, if you're in Miami and it's 85 degrees, you're going to want to go sit in an ice rink when you're like, hockey, what? Huh? Which end of the stick do they hold? I mean, I just don't get that. I don't get it. I can't wait till the NHL folds. They should lose half their teams. I hate it.
Bettman's really the most irrational commissioner in the history of college or pro sports.
Bettman's a guy that goes on the radio and tries to talk up the fact that they have no national TV contract, that it's good to be on Versus that's in like 14,000 homes.
Yeah.
And that, because they really have a good internet following. I mean, come on. Give me a break.
Ask Dennis Miller how Versus worked out for him.
What a clown.
Are you worried at all that by supporting the Seattle cause and running all the emails and everything that I might incur the wrath of one David Stern?
Well, I'm just worried about how it affects your candidacy for Milwaukee Bucks GM.
Yeah, you're coming with me, Johnny.
Thank you. That's good.
Actually, this is a good time to announce that.
Excellent.
You're going to be the marketing director.
This is like Bill and Hillary Clinton, too, for the price of one.
Yeah. Excellent. You're coming. You're coming. You're going to be the marketing director, and you're going to be the co-host of my weekly radio show about things I'm doing to help the team. I'm not going to fire the old marketing director, but I'm just going to also name you another
good
marketing director.
That's good. We can work together.
Yeah.
What
do we know
Logan
about this Herb Kohl?
Well, he's a senator from Wisconsin.
I know, but what do we know about him?
We've been a senator forever.
Is he rational?
You and I bumped into him once at a Celtics game. Do you remember that? We went to the Fleet Center. The Celtics were playing the Bucks, and we saw him on our way to a concession stand.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You were more excited than I was.
I was, because I was like, hey, there's Senator Herb Kohl. Yeah.
But you back me on the fact that Milwaukee is a very cool place to not only visit, but potentially live.
Sure, yeah. Let's see. We spent, what, like 3 days there? We had a fun, a great 3 days.
Yeah.
There's a Native American casino. There's beer and bratwurst. What more could you want? It was a great tailgate at the baseball game and the football game.
Where would you rank Milwaukee versus Pittsburgh?
Ah, wow. That's a good question.
Because we love Pittsburgh.
We liked Pittsburgh, but I don't know. I think the fact that it's on a Great Lake, I think that might put Milwaukee ahead.
I agree.
I liked the view when Chip Kane took us down near the lake there. That was nice.
Yeah, with all due respect to Pittsburgh.
The place where Latrell Sprewell grounded his boat or whatever. Yeah.
Which is now for sale.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe we can live on the yacht when we're working for the Bucks.
I'm adding that to my campaign platform. I'm going to have a campaign platform within the next couple of weeks. And maybe the headquarters, my GM headquarters, will be Latrell Sprewell's yacht. I think that gets me some votes.
VIP parties on the yacht. That would be excellent.
The good thing for my candidacy. Well, the good thing for my candidacy is that the Bucks have completely fallen apart.
See, they need you now. Between that and Brett Favre's retirement, Milwaukee needs you now more than ever.
They really
Simmons
do.
For GM.
They need a new hero.
They really do.
All right, we got to wrap it up. What is what are you weighing in for the Yanks this week? Scale 1 to 10. How worried are you?
Because of Buchholz's high ERA and Beckett's injury, even though I don't like the Yanks' overall plan, I'll say 1.75.
All right.
All right.
Good to hear. We'll talk to you next week.
Very good.
Keep in touch. Stay
Always.
Safe. And try to recover from this Holy Cross loss.
Thank you very much.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
So I get to sign off. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.